day and welcome to Detroit Today. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad that you have joined us. So we all know that Michigan is a pretty purple state. Not red, not blue, but kind of a mix of the two. And that means when one party has control of many of the branches of government, it can be really hard to keep that power for too long. It also means that it's difficult to carry majorities in all branches of government. But that's where we stand right now. Because of the consequences of the elections last week, Democrats have control of the governor's office, both chambers of the legislature, the state Supreme Court, and the two other statewide elected offices in Michigan, attorney general and secretary of state. And look, that means they have an unusual ability to enact their agenda. But what do you prioritize first? What do voters really want? And could an overreach result in a backlash, sending moderate Democrats and independents who were key to last week's big election win scattering away from the party? We've got a little bit of history to remind us of what could happen. The last time Democrats had control of the legislature and the governor's office, about 40 years ago, they kind of messed things up. They were dealing with enormous unemployment numbers and a state budget that was carrying a deficit. So they figured the solution was to immediately raise taxes. But voters were not really enthusiastic about that, and it didn't work out. The Democrats lost their majority in the legislature after Governor Jim Blanchard was in office for just about a year. The result was long-standing. Republican John Engler became the new Senate Majority Leader and would go on to challenge Jim Blanchard as governor in 1990 and beat him. So what are the lessons that Democrats today have learned from that period? And will they fall into similar traps now as they did then? It's a question that a lot of folks in Lansing are asking, even as lots of people who have waited for a really long time for Democrats to have control are lining up their ducks, trying to get in front of the new Speaker of the House or the Senate Majority Leader or the governor to say, look, it's our time. We can get this done now. It's a real tense situation, and it will get much more fraught with anxiety once January comes and the new legislature takes its seats. Detroit Free Press writer Paul Egan doesn't think, though, that Democrats will step into the same traps now as they did 40 years ago. He thinks that the political conditions have improved for Democrats and that they are generally more cautious today than they were in the early 1980s. He recently wrote about all of this in a piece titled "Democratic Control in Lansing Didn't Last Long in 1983, Why This Time Might Be Different." Paul, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hi, Stephen.
So I really loved reading your article because I've been thinking about 1983 quite a bit for the last week and thinking about what happened then. Now, I was 12 in 1983, so I was not covering all of this, and there aren't many people around who were. But I love that you went back and took a close look at what actually happened. So let's talk about what happened in 1983, the last time Democrats had that much power, how things played out, and why you think this time will be different.
Right. Well, Governor Blanchard inherited a terrible hand from former Governor Milliken. You know, Milliken had a lot of positive traits, but, you know, one of the things Blanchard concluded was that he was using a lot of accounting gimmicks and tricks to hide how bad the state's financial situation was. Also, you know, unemployment was double digit, so we had hundreds of millions of dollars in deficits, and the new governor, who you know, the Democrats had already controlled both the House and Senate, so it was a little different from this situation. What was new was the Michigan Democratic governor coming in, and he concluded that we needed a significant increase in the personal income tax, and a lot of trouble ensued.
Yeah. So what's different between now and then? As you point out, Democrats already had control of the legislature and had learned pretty well to work with Governor Milliken, who was a Republican, but who was a pretty moderate Republican. But as you point out, there were some pretty big problems looming that they hadn't solved and that some people thought they hadn't even paid much attention to. Talk about the situation now where you've got an incumbent Democratic governor, but who has worked for the last 4 years with the opposition in the legislature.
Right, and Governor Whitmer's got a huge budget surplus. They've got, you know, they've got about $7 billion left over from the last session that they haven't even spent yet. So the, you know, the economic situation couldn't be much different. The economy's still in pretty good shape, although there's certainly looming warning signs of an impending recession. But, you know, right now, the governor's in a much better position than Governor Blanchard was. Another really big difference is, you know, what lost Blanchard's majority in the Senate was recalls of two Democratic senators, one in Oakland County, one in Macomb County. You know, even if, you know, which isn't going to happen if Governor Whitmer and the legislature had to do something radical like a big tax increase, the chances of a recall happening today are almost, you know, very remote, because under Governor Snyder, the Republicans basically gutted the recall law. It's very much more difficult to recall a state lawmaker than it was in Blanchard's time.
So let's talk about then what the agenda ends up looking like for Governor Whitmer and the legislature. The trick here is something of threading a needle, I think, that you've got to deliver for the party that is now in power. And there's a lot of pent-up expectation among the Democratic Party because they haven't had power in Lansing for such a long time. And I've heard from lots of different interests in the state about what's on their wish list, you know, what they expect the governor and the legislature to get after once they are in power in January. At the same time, you know, it's a pretty slim majority, and lots of that majority, and in some very key districts, that majority owes to the presence of so-called independent voters, people who go back and forth, right? They vote for Republicans sometimes, they vote for Democrats sometimes, and if you don't keep them happy, you won't hold the majority for a very long time. So what does the threading of the needle look like this time, I guess, that Blanchard and the legislature failed to accomplish back then?
Yeah, you've described it well, Stephen. It's kind of bizarre in a way, but Governor Whitmer may find it more difficult to govern with majorities in both chambers than she found it to govern, you know, with Republican majorities in both chambers, because you do have these two competing dynamics. You know, Progress Michigan, a liberal group in Michigan, you know, Sam Inglot of that tweeted, you know, now is the time to blow past them, all gas, no brakes. And then you have, you know, people that have been around in the legislature for a little while, like Senator Erica Geis, saying, you know, our majorities are very small. We've got to be almost surgical. We got to pick our fights. And those two positions are going to come into conflict. The one thing I would say, though, Stephen, about Governor Blanchard is, you know, I don't think it really, at least arguably, it was not a sense where he overreached and Democrats overreached. You know, the thing to remember, Republicans, and this shows how different the times are, but Republicans were ready to sign on to the same income tax increase that he was pushing. They got into a conflict. Blanchard didn't want any strings attached to it. Republicans wanted a sunset date on the income tax increase, and so that kind of fell apart. And of course, it ended up being made temporary anyway. But I do think, It wasn't really, at least arguably, it wasn't a case of Blanchard and Democrats coming in and overreaching as so much as they were dealing with a crisis. And Blanchard, who was, by his own admission, much more inexperienced than Governor Whitmer, maybe didn't handle it as well as he should have.
I'm talking with Paul Egan. He covers state politics and government for the Detroit Free Press. He recently wrote a piece titled "Democratic Control in Lansing Didn't Last Long in 1983, Why This Time Might Be Different." We're talking about this new Democratic majority that is coming together as we speak and getting ready to take the reins in Lansing for the first time in 40 years come January. What will they be able to do with pretty slim margins and with an electorate that, yes, handed them control, but is full of voters who kind of go back and forth, sometimes vote for Republicans, sometimes vote for Democrats? There will be a lot of expectations on the governor and the legislature from interest groups, the liberal interest groups, who have waited a really long time to get things done in Lansing and have been thwarted by the fact that the Democrats didn't have control. But they will also be under pressure from those moderates and independents who say, well, I don't want you going too far. Don't get too crazy. In some ways, it might be described as a majority if they can keep it, if I might borrow from the famous Ben Franklin line about the beginning of our republic. We want to hear from you during the conversation, too. Give us a call and tell us what you make of the new Democratic majority and what you expect to have them get done. What do you think they should be prioritizing? What do you think they should maybe be more skittish about prioritizing? What kinds of things do you think they could do that could improve things here in the state for people? What kind of things should they avoid to not anger independents who may flee to the Republican Party in 2 years when we do all of this election thing all over again? In a little bit, we are going to talk to two people who won in swing districts. Veronica Kleinfeld is Macomb County Commissioner. She is State Senator-elect for District 11. If you watch TV at all in the last 2 or 3 months, you saw lots of ads about her race on both sides. Also, Kevin Hertel, who's the current state rep for the 18th House District, and he is Senator-elect for District 12, also in Macomb County. He'll join us as well. Also, lots of commercials about that race. There was a reason that both parties were really focused on it, because they knew it would be close, and Democrats certainly knew that those two seats would be key to the majority that they wanted to put together. Again, give us a call on the phones, 313-577-1019, to let us know how you're thinking about all of this and what you would like to see Democrats do. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can try to include you in the program that way. Paul, before we get to listeners, you talked with Jim Blanchard. I wonder what his advice was for Governor Whitmer and the legislature, and how does he look back on the things that he did that voters were so unhappy with?
Right. Well, I specifically asked him about his advice for Governor Whitmer, and he basically said, he didn't want to do that. That whatever they wanted to decide to do, he thought it was a huge opportunity for them, something we've never seen, in generations, really. Like, he felt it was a much better opportunity than what he had. Governor Blanchard also, pointed to the fact that, that he came in with experience in Congress, and he'd also worked for the state attorney general's office, but he'd never been in the state legislature, certainly had never been governor. And he said, look, Governor Whitmer's got all this experience in the legislature. She's also got 4 years as governor under her belt. She's going to be in a position to handle this properly that I wasn't. So I thought that was interesting that, that in addition to pointing out the much worse hand that he was dealt, he also feels that Governor Whitmer's in a much better position to handle this opportunity than he was.
Yeah. Some of the popular issues that people are already talking about in Lansing, and we had the incoming speaker, Joe Tate, with us yesterday on the program. He talked about the earned income tax credit, repealing the retirement tax, boosting education funding. These seem to me like the kinds of things that would be popular with people. I think given the problems we're having with inflation in the economy, taking money out of people's wallets, those are at least a couple things that would put money into their wallets. But what kinds of other things will the governor and legislature want to focus on in that first 6 months, 6 to 12 month window to try to make a statement maybe about what they're willing to do and how they plan to deliver on this mandate?
Yes, Stephen. The ones you mentioned, definitely, I think, are kind of the low-hanging fruit that is there. Another one that would fall into that category is repealing the 1931 abortion law, even though Proposal 3 has passed. I think they want to get that off the books so that it can never sort of rear its head again. You know, what's going to get interesting is issues like right to work. There's a lot of desire among many Democrats, certainly union members, to repeal that. How exactly would it work? I doubt they could make it retroactive. Probably it would be for going forward. But that, I mean, you remember what the fight was like to bring that in. I don't think the fight to repeal it would be quite as great, but you're talking about something there that would expend a lot of political capital, but it would also make a statement. It's an very important principle for Democrats. They've talked about ethics and transparency, especially after the Lee Chatfield scandal. I would expect them to make some moves on that. Also, probably conduct numerous investigations into exactly what went on under Chatfield. A really interesting one to me, Stephen, and we had an article today, was, you know, the governor is, whatever else you can say about her, she's a very pragmatic politician. She's not as ideological, perhaps, as a lot of the lawmakers are. And she's concerned, like business is concerned, about this big increase in the minimum wage, and particularly the wage for tipped workers that's now scheduled to go into effect early next year. And she's talking about, you know, she's sympathetic to wanting to slow down the increase in the minimum wage, which isn't exactly something you typically hear from a Democrat. And I interviewed her yesterday. She said, you know, it might actually make sense if we could get that done in lame duck, something that she feels she might have a better chance with a Republican legislature to get it done than with Democrats. So it's really going to be an interesting session.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. Big Neo on Twitter says Democrats have to be careful to avoid an overreach. They should also focus on things that affect both sides. The gas tax, safe streets, and creating world-class public schools is something all citizens can get behind, regardless of party. Paul, that reminds me of the other side of the coin here. There are still lots of Republicans who will hold office in Lansing. They will not be in charge for the first time in a long time, but they will want to try to get some things done too. What would their agenda look like, and how would they, I guess, how will they adjust to this idea of not being in charge? It'll be a new situation for everybody who's in Lansing at this point, given term limits.
Yes, Stephen, it's going to be a big adjustment for Republicans, especially because right now their party is kind of in flux and in conflict over, you know, the whole situation with former President Trump and you know, factions in the party and you know, who's really going to be calling the shots going forward. The state Republican Party is really in a mess right now. So you know, there were some interesting statements right after the election about being the loyal opposition. We're really gonna have to wait and see how this plays out. But one thing that's pretty certain is with a 56-54 advantage in the House and a 20-18 advantage in the Senate, Governor Whitmer is going to need Republican votes to get a lot of things passed. I mean, because Democrats are not going to walk in lockstep, and I think that leaves opening for negotiations on you know, certain things that Republicans want. You know, they certainly are interested in tax cuts, more tax relief, which again, because the state surplus is mostly one-time money, may not be something the governor is willing to go along with. But certainly, you mentioned earned income tax credit, getting rid of the retirement tax, and you know, possibly there may be some leeway for the governor and Republicans to agree on some further tax relief.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones here. Robert and Taylor, quickly, Robert, what's on your mind?
I'd like to know when the prosecution for Flint is going to happen. They knew for 2 years that them people were being poisoned. They intentionally kept going, right? And it was a terrorist assault. They profited, Republicans profited, politically or financially, by what they did.
Yeah, Robert, that's a great question, given that we recently saw the remaining criminal charges in that case have to be dropped for procedural reasons, really. But Paul, this is an issue I hear from a lot of Democrats. They really do want to see some sort of, I guess, criminal justice delivered in the Flint water crisis. What's the possibility that a Democratic majority gets that done in a more, I guess, a more enthusiastic way than before?
It seems very unlikely. Attorney General Dana Nessel has said she is appealing the latest rulings that dismissed the criminal charges, but it doesn't look like she's on very solid legal ground. At least we can say that it's going to be a real stretch to get that done. And now we've got a situation where statutes of limitations have expired. You know, the Democrats can pass legislation, but they can't really make it retroactive to, you know, to things that happened a number of years ago. So, you know, well, I don't want to say anything absolutely definitive. I would say that it's looking less and less likely that anyone will ever be successfully criminally prosecuted for what happened in Flint.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Paul Egan, great story about the differences and comparisons between now and 1983. And thanks for joining us here on Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking with some of the people who make up this new Democratic majority in Lansing. We're going to talk to two people who were elected in districts where the margins were pretty narrow and where Democrats were not sure that they would end up winning. Veronica Kleinfeld will join us next. She's a state senator-elect in District 11. And then Kevin Hertel, who is state senator-elect for District 12, will join us as well. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.